Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, Expanse fans, this is Cher.
And Adam.
And welcome to another episode of The Churn, a very happy episode, even though the episode of The Expanse itself was not happy. But we're very happy because we found out very late over the weekend, I think it was around midnight Eastern time, that The Expanse will live to see another day at Amazon.
Amazing. Absolutely. That's amazing.
Of course, the first thing we have to talk about today, and we have joining us from a top secret location doing a top secret project, is Cass Anbar, who's going to talk about the amazing news that The Expanse will live on another season on Amazon.
Sorry.
It's okay. It was actually a really good echo, so it sounded like there's multiple wolves with you. So first, let's talk about, I mean, Cass, you were there. So
I was there, man.
What it was like to experience unexpected.
Oh, my God. It was surreal. The story is like literally goes back 5 months. I got invited to the science panel, the ISDC, International Space Development Conference, which is one of the most prestigious conferences for science in the United States. And Buzz Aldrin was there. And this was like months ago, long before any of us had any idea that the show was going to be canceled. And I agreed to do it. And then as time went on, I kind of said, well, it's going to be happening right in the middle of our season three. Why don't I get some of the people from the show to do like an actual panel to promote the show? And so I asked Narain, and he said, okay, let's do it. And then none of the actors were going to be there because everyone was going to be in their respective other parts of the country. And most of the showrunners were away. And so then the show got canceled. And there was a massive amount of sadness and depression that we were all going through, and, you know, even debating whether we're going to do this. Then I find out that one of the people on the panel, or who's like kind of like majorly involved in this conference, is Jeff Bezos.
He was at the conference, or is he on your panel?
No, he was on the conference. He was at the conference, and I said, okay, this is weird. Like, he's one of the people that we're kind of trying to get interested. Then I find out, I can't remember if it was Dan or Ty or somebody told me that, well, you know, Jeff Bezos loves The Expanse. And I'm like, what? And then someone sent me a screenshot of Bezos holding a Kindle demonstrating, I think that's an Amazon product. And guess what book is on the Kindle? Is Leviathan Wakes. And the reason it's on there is because he loves The Expanse. And I'm like, okay, this is really, really weird. And then I'm like, okay, well, we should maybe do something about this. And that, like, my brain just started percolating on how, like, it's just too many things happening in synchronicity. And then the fans started getting into an uproar, and they did that banner thing, and the banner, they chose to do it over Amazon. And on that same day, I talked to Sci-Fi and I talked to Alcon, and what I thought was like a done deal, then I got different versions from everyone that it wasn't quite dead, and like that everybody kind of didn't want it to go. And I was
you
like,
"You mean, well, the show?"
The show, yeah. Like it was put to rest, but then it felt like, no, maybe there is a heartbeat. And then I just, something snapped inside me, and I said, "Fuck it, I'm gonna do my shit and do what I do and not listen to the heaviness in the atmosphere." And I got my team together that's on social media. I said, let's give these guys a direction. And I started asking people about the panel. I got Steven and Wes interested. I got Narain. I got Kara. Kara G, who's our drummer. And
our drummers. Something fans.
And things just started going. And I kind of talked to Noreen. I said, wouldn't it be cool if we got an announcement and Jeff Bezos was there and we could get everyone up on stage? And he's like, Cass, come on. He's the richest man in the world. Don't even think about that. And I'm like, okay. And I kind of like got schooled, but I'm like, I still kept thinking about it.
Right.
And then we went and we did the panel, and the panel happened at around 5 to 6 o'clock. It was such an electric panel. Kyle Hill did our moderation, and he made it funny, and the audience was 100% like inspired. Like, they were so into the show. And Noreen and we had Babak, the Mohawk man,
right,
who's the scientist
from JPL.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. they were just eating it up from the science angle. And it ended with such a bang. And someone came up to me and said, hey, Bezos is outside schmoozing with people. You should go out and see him. And I was like, oh my God, Bezos is right outside our room. And so I grabbed Noreen and I grabbed Steven. I said, let's go talk to him. And they were like, no, we can't do this. They were so stressed out about meeting him. And I dragged them out. And so I got them behind me and I go up to Bezos. I talk to his security guy and I say, Mr. Bezos, I'm Cass Anvar. And this is, and I turned behind me and Steven and Noreen had ditched me. And I said, I guess I'm alone. And he looked at me, he goes, oh, you, I know you, you're a great actor. And I went, oh, gee, thank you, sir. And I said, so I hear you're a big fan of the books. He goes, yeah, but I love the show. And I was like, really? I didn't know you were watching the show. He goes, no, I love it. And he says, and you're a great actor. You guys are so great. And he goes, and you know, Amazon's really trying to make this thing work, right? And I said, yeah, no, I'm really, he goes, my fingers are crossed. He goes, nothing's done yet, but we're really hoping it works out. And I went, oh my God. Oh my God. Hearing that from Jeff Bezos, that they're really trying to, I said that, and he said, nothing's done yet, but that's what we're hoping for. And so then I went and I reamed out Steven and Noreen, said, why don't you ditch me, guys? And he said, no, it was better if it was just you, if we had gone mobbed him. And I was like, okay, fine strategy. And then we got brought into this dinner, this gala dinner at the end, and we're sitting right beside Bezos's table. And Bezos is going to be receiving an award that night for his involvement in the Space Development Agency and trying to colonize the solar system. He's getting an award. And we went as a group, we went and we met him, and it was really, really awesome. And he did this really cool photo with us where we're all kind of like going, yeah, save the expanse. It was a really nice photo that made it into the press. And then he sat down, and the awards started, and I found one of my Expanse comic books that has all of our origins in it. And I said, you know what? I think Bezos is probably a bit of a nerd, so he's probably going to like comics. And so I got everyone around the table to sign it. And I went over to him while the ceremony was going on. I said, here, I figured you're a bit of a comic book nerd, so here's a comic book of the show. And he grabbed my arm, and he said, I can't help but think that us all being here right now is significant. And I got goosebumps. The hair on my arm stood up. And I went, yeah, I kind of think that too. And I sat down. And then when I sat down, I looked over at him. We started to eat. And he was on his phone texting for 15 minutes straight after that. And there was awards going on stage. There was things going on. And he was like in his phone. Text. And then at some point, boom, he just stopped. And he looked up and he just started enjoying the evening. And then he went up for his award and everyone's cheering and we're all very happy. Like, everyone's like, oh man, I'm so glad we did this event, Cass. This was such a great idea. And like, people are like, this, you know what? This was a great way to kind of get everyone and galvanize and blah, blah. So he gets up and the first thing he says is, before I get into this award thing, how many of you guys in the audience know The Expanse? And then there was this whoop from the audience, like you were at a hockey game, like, you know, a Toronto's Montreal Canadiens hockey game, and someone
this
just scored
a
goal.
That's such a Canadian reference. I don't understand it, but okay.
I don't know. Give me an equivalent, guys.
Yankee game.
But it was not just a polite applause. It was like a visceral blow the roof off type of wah, and we all kind of like jumped. And then he said, and you guys probably know that the show got canceled. And Amazon's been really, really trying very hard to do something about that. And when I met these guys an hour ago, I told them we were trying and there was nothing really for sure. It's a very complicated deal with the foreign stuff. And he was pretty, pretty open about it. And he says, but I just wanted to let you guys know, as of 10 minutes ago, I just got a text message and apparently we've saved the Expanse. And at that point, all the blood drained from our faces and we all kind of went into comatose shock. And that's when you saw me stand up and I thrust my hands into the air and I went, whoa! And I turned back to everybody. And honestly, I've never seen a table of people like so stunned. It was almost like it was the last thing anybody was ever expecting to happen. And quite, I mean, let's be honest, it was the last thing we were expecting to happen in that moment. And then once reality hit, everybody stood up. Wes stood up and he started cheering like a bandit. And Steven got up. He almost had tears in his eyes. Hallie started crying. And Noreen was just giddy. It was amazing. Kara started dancing, obviously, that's what Kara does when she's happy. But it was probably one of the most euphoric and amazing and completely authentic and organic experiences I have ever had, because it was not expected. I never expected something like that would happen spontaneously. But I guess, you know, you're the richest man in the world. You run your company. You're the boss. You get to do whatever you want. And he probably was there texting saying, I'd like to use this opportunity to, if we're going to do this, let's do it now, because I've got an amazing audience here. And if this is going to happen, give me the answer now. And he got the answer.
Or was it that your conversation with him was what convinced him to do
right.
it?
And he was actually, that's what I'm actually gleaning from this, is that yeah. it was Cass's presence.
I am not going to take credit for that.
It was like a wish. It was like the secret. It was like the secret. He like activated the
Think, no, but those Alcon people, those people at Alcon were working their butts off. Andrew and Laura and those guys were hustling and dealing and negotiating like crazy. And from what I understood, everything was happening at the same time, because afterwards we went on celebrated with the heads of Alcon and the people who actually worked the deal out. And they literally said their last interactions, their last text messages and everything finalizing the deal was around the time we were all eating and negotiating. Like everything was happening at the same time. It literally was happening in real time. And who knows? You know what? Maybe like, I mean, God willing, I helped inspire it, but who cares? All that matters is that it was an amazing team effort. Like, it was an amazing team effort. And I put the lion's share of it onto the fans, because yeah. all I did was I pointed them in the right direction. They were like a fire hydrant with this powerful stream, but it was going in 15 different directions. And all I did was tap into it and tell them, this is what's going to make the difference. Do this, do this, do this. And they were incredibly responsive and they did what I said, and boom, you know, that's what happens when you can channel that amount of incredibly positive energy.
I mean, love from the fans, absolutely. Listen, it absolutely helped tremendously, but it's like, we also can't take away from the fact that the show really just is that good of a show. Like was critically acclaimed, and this season is just ridiculously good. So yes, 100%. I'm not taking away from the fans, because the way they mobilized, there was a lot of, I've never seen fans be this creative with the,
exactly.
with the plane and launching something into space. You know, and it just also speaks to how the fans,
they were raising
the
money.
Show.
Like crazy.
Yeah.
Money to like, they raised $5,000 in 4 hours to fly the banners, and then they raised another $4,000 to send the Rossi into space in like a few hours. Like, I've never seen that,
and it's really amazing. I mean, I think it says a lot about this fandom and this community, and I think that also it's the strength of the show. So as much as yes, absolutely, having that fan support is amazing, but also, you know, you have to give it to you guys and the work that all of you've done on the show.
Absolutely. The show itself is like a diamond, and obviously having Jeff Bezos be in love with that show, that doesn't hurt.
No, it definitely does not.
But it was a combination, you know. It was like getting the fans directed, the fans providing this incredible push, and then our amazing team at Alcon that negotiated this deal in like record time, and then Bezos himself having a profound passion and love for the material, and then having a show that nobody could argue with, you know, like it was just a perfect storm of events that that just got swept away, and we had like a Cinderella story. It was literally it's a moment I will never forget. I've never experienced anything like it, and me and the group of people at that table, I think, you know, we're going to have that memory for the rest of our lives, and it was absolutely amazing.
Ty and Daniel, how did you guys find out?
How did we find out? I think we got a call from, I think I got a message from Kaz. I think I got a little WhatsApp message from Kaz saying, oh my God, you won't believe this.
I think what I said was, I'm feeling thirsty.
Yes. No, I'm afraid that I'm responsible for Kaz's bar tab from now on. I think that's just true. That's just the case.
Sweet. Did you guys had a bet? Is that what that was?
No, not a bet. I saw what Kaz was doing, and I saw the amount of engagement and work that he was doing to breathe life into what I assumed was a corpse. And I said, you know, if you do this, I'm buying your drinks from now on. And now he did it, and now I have to buy his fucking drinks.
and by the way, just so you know, that inspired a worldwide pub crawl because people started offering to buy me drinks.
I saw
and
that.
I was like, hell, I'm going to take Ty and Daniel and go on a pub crawl. And then they just started chiming in. So I've got people offering us drinks from Thailand to Australia to all parts of Canada and the U.S. and London. So
you know,
at some point,
you know,
I'm
a teetotaler, right? It's going to be like all mineral water around the world for Daniel. It's going to
be. Well, Ty's going to have to hold up the heavy hitter side of it.
I'm very, very happy for you guys. I'm sure the fans, I mean, they were ecstatic. Twitter
so
lit up. Yeah. So when do you guys get back to the writer's room, Ty and Daniel?
We are waiting to hear that. Now, I think the earliest we could conceivably be there is like next week. The latest I think we could conceivably be there is probably the week after. I think we really need to wash our socks at this point and just get out to LA. Yeah.
I think people have to understand though, this was not a situation where, hey guys, just put yourselves on hold. We're going to try and make this thing work. Like nobody was on hold. Like
no.
This was like, They had started tearing down the sets. Everyone had been released. People were looking for new jobs. We lost a few people from our big team, and now it just came screeching to a halt and going back onto the track. It's like a major reorientation of a massive machine that had started to dismantle itself. So it's like everybody's pulling themselves back together and trying to get refocused and like. You know, I feel bad for our team back in Toronto that had literally mourned it because they literally had pulled apart parts of the set and now are going to start to get us back up and running again.
On the other hand, I have talked to some of the folks in Toronto who are glad that we're not dead.
Oh yeah.
It was a rocky, weird way to do it. But yeah, everyone I've spoken to is happy to be back on board and happy that we're doing it some more.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So excited. I can't wait to get everybody together again and we just have like that first big whoop-de-doo.
I can't wait to get you a script.
Yeah, right.
Oh, like Kaz ever pays attention to the script.
Yeah, back to BA vision as usual.
Well, I know you're, you know, on location right now on set, so thank you for spending some time to tell us what happened. Congratulations on, you know, the show getting picked up. We're incredibly, as fans, we're incredibly excited, but then we're also excited because that means we're going to do more of the churn. So,
oh my God.
You know what
Bezos said? One of the things, the really nicest thing he said when he was up there giving us the good news, and this is for you guys, for you and Ty and Dan. He says, it is just way too big of a shame to not get to tell this whole story. There is so much amazing stuff ahead. I can't even envision not getting a chance to tell that story.
That's
what he said. And I was so like, I totally agree with it. Like having just read the next two books, I'm like, oh my God, there's no way we can't not do this. It was just so beautiful. Sorry.
Yeah. I had that exact thought watching this week's episode. Like just because up until last week, the show was really, I felt picking up steam and everything's like, things are happening, the ring's open, all that stuff. And I'm like, man, and now we're not going to get to see the rest of it. And now we are. And it was such a nice moment watching this week's episode to think of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, again, like I don't think you guys understand, like we really are so happy for you guys. We're so happy to see that the show's continuing, and we're of course like fans of the show, and we're going to support the show as long as it exists. We're going to be here to support it. So I'm really happy for you guys. I'm going to let you go film whatever it is that you're filming that you're not going to tell us about because surprise, surprise, somebody had to put cast on a gag.
I don't know why. I don't know why people think I talk to them.
You don't ever share anything. You never talk. So we'll definitely talk to you soon. Hopefully we'll do a nice big, season
love
finale wrap up like last year where we were just
love
maniacs.
You. So good. Oh, can't wait.
I know everyone, even people at Sci-Fi, even though maybe some people don't want to believe it, we're very happy to see that the show is going to continue to live on because there really is nothing but love for those involved with the show. I want to see where it's going because shit is getting bananas this season.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. This is a very interesting episode in terms of how it got to that happening.
So let's break down episode 8 from season 3. It reaches out, and joining us per usual are Daniel and Ty. Feel free to say hello at your leisure, gentlemen. Notice how I'm not setting them up with the hi guys.
You know, but it's such a good joke. I feel you've missed
say
the opportunity.
Say hi guys.
Hi guys. See, it's just classic. Always works.
Yes.
Never not funny.
Never not funny. And per usual, Ty says nothing. Until he has an end to make fun of me, which will come any minute now. So first starters, initial surface level reaction to this week's app.
I thought this week's episode, it was a slower burn than the past couple weeks, in my opinion. For most of the running time, it kind of felt like we were taking a breath. Now that the stage has been set with the ring being open and all the different parties converging on it. And then in the last like 5 to 10 minutes, everything went bananas. And it was some of the most intense storytelling I've seen on The Expanse to date. And I think that that's saying a lot because of how intense this show can get. So, yeah, that's how I felt about it. I really dug the chance to kind of take a breath and check in with everybody and see how all the relationships are developing, et cetera. And then for things to go as crazy as they did and the way it climaxes was really, really cool.
See, I loved this episode. I don't think it was as slow of a burn, though. I think in the beginning, or I felt in the beginning, whatever's going on with this mystery chick, who, by the way, I was eating when I was watching this episode, and I had to stop eating. Because things got a little gross when she decides to bash this dude's head in so she can fit him in the little storage space that she was stowing him away in to hide his body. So thanks for that.
Yeah, this whole season has been big on the body horror for sure.
Yeah, well, definitely yeah,
it's something we do. A little body horror. It's.
And we got to see Mineo explode like 5 times right. in this episode.
Yeah.
Edition, just in case we forgot from last time what it was like.
So don't be eating while watching this episode, basically. So that was the mistake that I made. But I also thought that, Steven did a great job this episode. And even though Naomi wasn't, Dom wasn't in the episode as much, she did a great job too this episode. They were both great. Everybody was great, but those two really... you felt the raw emotion in the moments when you were supposed to feel it. And Thomas Jane, you know, really knows how to play whatever the hell he is. Like,
oh man, there was there was a moment with him. I don't know what you would even call what he does, but he has the hat on. And Holden says something, and
he's like, does a twitch with his face?
And he just, no, in response, he just kind of ducks his head and looks down the brim of his hat at him. Yeah. And it was the coolest, little like detective gesture. I was just like, and like just a subtle thing, you know, it's not like he did a lot there.
I kind of just feel like really Thomas should always wear that hat now.
No, the man wears that hat.
Yeah.
He literally wears the shit out of that hat. Like, yeah. That hat is just...
That's his hat. That's a good hat.
Well, he picked really that hat. That was... wardrobe gave him a bunch of different options, and that's the one he liked. So that's the one he picked.
It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. I also really appreciated a lot of little subtle details that I've noticed in this episode, and one of them is with Amos's tattoos, how... Some of them, and it seems to me, and maybe I'm just over reading into it, how you can tell which ones are newer and then the ones that are supposed to be older are like faded. And I don't even know if that's intentional or not, but
it's because some of them are actually his and some of them are added.
Well, I know the
wardrobe.
One on his arm. Yeah, I know the one actually is. But no, but I'm talking about the ones that were added, because there's one that's like on his forearm that looks a little bit darker than the other tattoos, or maybe just look that way because of lighting, but for some reason I just noticed it. But yeah,
I don't think it's deliberate.
Okay, well then never mind, I take it back, screw the details. So let's get into it and, you know, really break it down. First of all, what is up with this? I have so many questions. First, when am I gonna find out who this girl is?
Later in the season, probably.
Okay.
Would be my guess.
My next question, and if am I wrong? So the cameraman is obviously like he's the one that set them up. Set up Steven. Well, Steven. Holden.
Yeah, he did something, and it definitely had an unfortunate effect on the Rossi.
They look more like body modifications. They're not tattoos. They're body modifications that are on his fingertips and arms.
Well, they're...
It's actually technology. He's blind, and he has a kind of blindness that they can't
fix.
Cure.
Yeah.
So what he has is sort of air and motion sensors in his fingers, so that it kind of acts like radar, like sonar. So he can, you know, he can see a 3D map of the space around him using his fingers.
And actually, it's based on some real technology that people are playing with now, where we're finding ways to build assistive devices for blind folks that give alternate inputs to let them put together a visual image. And with some of them, you've actually seen people using the assistive devices long enough, getting used to them enough that you start seeing their visual cortex firing, and so you know that they're actually experiencing vision, just we're using their eyes to do it. So this is the updated version of that.
But that is a form, and I know it's not called body modification, and I know there's a term for it, and I can't remember the term for it. It's like something hacking, right? Where people put technology as a like an implant.
Yeah, there's biohacking, which is
that's
thing.
It, biohacking.
And there are people who like have put magnets in their skin so that they can feel magnetic forces. They can feel magnetic waves. And yeah, that's weird, but sure, whatever.
And is that when you were creating that for that character, is that, did you work with somebody or talk to somebody that specializes in that field about how maybe in the future that technology would work or look?
Well, actually, that's something that we kind of had in the books, right?
It's from the books. It's I think I made that one up.
I think you made it, but my wife is an occupational therapist and has worked with folks on activities of daily living and working with assistive devices, and so the idiom surrounding that is something that I think we're both pretty familiar with from hanging out with her.
Okay. I mean, it's just really cool. Like I noticed those, I noticed that tech more in this episode and his hands than I did in the previous episode. So I was really interested to learn more about that.
Well, one of the things we didn't want to do is have the fact that he's blind be a conversation on the show. Because it just feels like by presenting it as just a fact of this guy's existence and nobody else really making a big deal out of it, it just feels like a better way to present, you know, I don't want to even call it disability, but like, you know, alternate,
how this guy's making his way through.
Yeah. And it's just the reality of his life. And it doesn't really hamper him. Cause he has his, like you said, he's assisted living things and everybody else just kind of knows. And it's not a big deal. We just didn't want to make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
And I mean, and honestly, it's like, obviously you're aware of the fact, and not even immediately, but if you didn't read the books, you become aware of the fact a little bit later on that he doesn't have his vision. But aside from that, he very much, everything else about him is written and treated like an able-bodied character, which is fantastic.
He is an able-bodied character. Just right. Instead of seeing through his eyes, he sees through nerve impulses coming up from his fingers.
And yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, and
I love that.
Yeah, the point is that he gets the job done. What? He uses a different toolbox. That's fine. Whatever.
So let's go back a little bit to Holden's having his visions, and a couple people have caught him freaking out. So now there's the concern that Holden's losing his shit.
Well, it seems like a fair thing to worry about.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
There's definitely precedent for why this would be not a good scenario.
He's been stressed.
I was just going to say there were a lot of great moments in that arc. I mean, Amos and Holden's first conversation where Amos says, you know, just don't break the coffee machine again. And then my personal favorite was the little moment of spying on Alex and Amos having that conversation. And Alex says, you know, that is a horrible violation of his privacy. What did it say? I thought that was really great.
Yeah.
Can I actually ask a question about the whole Rossi scenario and how much of the found, like, I don't even want to call it found footage, but like the drone's eye view footage that we're using now. Can you guys talk a bit about the decision to go down that road and I guess finding the balance between doing that enough and not doing it too much, if that makes sense?
Yeah, that's give credit for that one to our director of that block. He really engaged with this idea of the documentary crew and how, because the big change in the crew dynamic is now these two strangers live among them. And it's not just that you have two strangers living among them, but you have two professional spies who are trying to overhear everything, who are spying on you in private moments, and just the discomfort that would come from that, how that would unbalance the crew's social dynamic. And so he wanted every chance he could to create that sense of invasion of privacy. So whenever it was possible to get that sort of drone's eye view of a scene, so we feel like we're intruding in those scenes. He wanted to do that. So I think he wound up hitting a really nice balance. Shot a bunch of stuff, and then in editing figured out what was the right mix so that we had enough of it to feel that sense of invasion, but not so much that the whole episode feels like a found footage movie.
And we need that shot of Holden, like the up the nose shot while he's crying, saying he's so sorry.
Yeah, no, that's a great plan. No. We'll do that next time.
Yeah. But I also really dug, and I keep forgetting this actress's name, and it's going to drive me nuts. The one who plays the reporter.
Nadine Nicole.
No. Thank you. Yeah, Anna.
That's not Nadine Cole?
Nadine Nicole is the one who plays Melba.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? They both got introduced at the same time, so I keep getting them.
And the problem I always have remembering Anna's name is that we have the character Anna, and so I think I'm getting it wrong, but no.
Yeah, and I have a great story about her when we're ready.
Okay, go ahead.
We haven't talked about that moment in the episode yet, but it's the moment where she confronts Holden in the galley.
Yeah, I was.
I think that's exactly what I was getting to in that moment of her, like, basically telling him, you know, to that he has to be present and everything. And the way she does it is so, like, I don't want to, it's weirdly, like, intimate, you know, but not almost sexual, but not really, but then just, like, so overwhelming. It feels like it's impossible to say no to something like that.
Yeah, so on that topic, I happened to be on set the day we were shooting that. I don't remember why I was down there, but so I was hanging around the set, and that's the first scene we shot with Anna and Steven together. It's the first time they had worked together. Anna's a pro. She knew every bit of that speech right out of the gate, very first take. She got everything right. So we shot the first take of it. Basically her take of it is the one you see in the show. All of that was there. They yell cut. I'm sort of hanging around by the coffee cart, and Steven comes walking over, and he walks up to me, goes, "She's fucking terrifying." That's the first thing he said.
So that's good.
Yeah, yeah, that was really...
I think she nailed that sort of intense, very professional, scary, smart, professional woman who's not going to screw around, who's not going to let you mess her thing up, who will roll right over the top of you if you're fucking her deal up. I think she nails that. And when she puts that mode on, she is terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. But terrifying, and like I said, and I don't want to... You know, I'm like, I don't want to make like a sexual thing. Like, it felt intimate. Like, it felt like she was like, "Listen, I am seeing right into your soul right now, and I'm going to tell you exactly what's there." You know, and that was really powerful, I thought.
Well, it's interesting because she's not a character that we've seen before on the show.
Yeah.
And I really do like what she brought to the mix with that. And the way that she's there and able to push the buttons on the crew and manipulate them and see what they are, and therefore we get to see what they are too, and to see where they are restrained and where they're not.
Yeah, Adam, do you have like more questions? Because I feel like I monopolized the first part of this conversation.
No. I mean, I have other stuff I want to talk about for sure, but like that's it kind of on that front. And it's just going to be interesting to see, you know, how that character develops as she gets deeper into the middle of this situation. You know, I love the "we're going to win so many awards" comment.
Oh my God. Yeah. Take those digs when you can, guys. I love it. Is she in on this whole sabotage or not? Because,
well, if you're going to,
I'm not,
you're going to learn more about that later.
I will say, generally speaking, if you are getting somebody to be part of a sabotage plot that will destroy the ship they are on, that's a hard sell.
Yeah, I don't think that she... I don't know for sure, but...
Here you go. Get on the ship and then sink it.
But yeah, there's more details coming.
Yeah. Without too many spoilers.
And So here's my question. The whole idea of someone, you know, doing a composite of the Holden image with that message that went out. If I was Aaron Wright, why wouldn't I have just said that when they played my message for Sorrento Gillis?
Well, part of the idea...
Other than pride, I guess.
Well, pride is a good thing. But one of the things that we don't go into because we don't want to spend a whole lot of time teching the tech is the James Holden fake video is imperfect. There will be artifacts in it. To show that it was manipulated.
Yeah,
but you don't have time to do that in the moment.
Right. It only needs to hold up for the purposes of what it is intended for. And it only needs to hold up for a few moments. Any expert in video analysis would be able to figure out that it's a fake, given enough time. But like Daniel said, it's just in the moment you don't have time.
But by that time... somebody will have shot him.
Yes, the missiles were already flying by the time that would have happened.
The thing about that particular technology that is really interesting to me is we wrote that book a few years back, and that was one of the big speculative elements we had in it, is this whole kind of faking video in real time and how that's very science fictional. And now it turns out people are doing it. I don't know if you saw this online. There was a video of President Obama speaking things that he never actually said with Jordan Peele doing the voice. We're at the point where that is a real technology now.
Yeah, I was going to say that's just, I mean, I would say almost that as a readily available thing is almost right around the corner.
Yeah, it wasn't when we wrote the book, though. It was still very speculative when we were doing the book.
So when it happens and destroys the fabric of society because no one can believe anything anymore, we have you guys to thank.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. What else? What else happened? I mean, we could talk a lot about Miller and Holden. That was a big central part of this episode. So did you finally get what I was talking about when I said that that Miller was teased earlier in the season?
Yeah. So sorry, because I was just trying to figure out my mic situation. This is such fun times. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Let's just keep going with the episode because everything you're saying so far was already stuff I was like wondering about and thinking about.
We're so in sync. See, that's you know, professionalism right there.
Well, we're also going according to like the actual episode. So let's talk a little bit about this whole, you know, everyone is now locked on the Rocinante and Holden's having these, you know, hallucinations, but are they hallucinations? Like, because now I'm starting to get a little like confused.
When Miller first showed up, his presence had been teased in a certain way that why this would be happening had been teased a little bit earlier in the season, and I was just it was done again in this episode.
Okay, so you're asking me if I knew what you meant earlier in the season when it was teased,
right? Or is it clear now?
Okay, honestly, no.
Yeah, what he's saying is that just before Miller shows back up, we show yet another shot of the blue goo under the deck in the Rossi.
And then Miller shows up.
As
though using... using montage technique to put two images next to each other to create a sense of meaning.
Isn't that the Korshunov effect?
I think Korshunov is the guy who came up with montage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not montage the way we use it now.
Earlier in the training season. Montage.
Yeah, there was a very brief shot earlier in the season of
the Hall of I smoke a lot of weed. You can't expect me to always remember stuff like this.
No, we don't.
I know. But yet, now that you mention it, yes, now I actually do remember it. Okay, so that actually kind of answers my question in a way, right? I feel like it does.
Well, it certainly.
But if I say it does, it's like a spoiler.
Strong hint. I mean, there's a suggestion at least.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think that we can surmise at this point, without saying anything, that Holden is not. This is not just in his head, right? This is something that is happening connected to the ring and the proto molecule. I don't think that.
But he's also connected to it in a way that no one else is on the ship, because when he's having these like moments, only he sees what he sees.
That's right.
We're okay.
How come his blood tests keep coming back clean that he obsessively keeps running?
Because he's not infected with proto molecule?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh my God. I have so many questions, but I know you can't answer them.
No, we really can't. I mean, I can tell you everything, but then you don't have to watch the show. Yeah. I mean...
Yeah. No.
Do you want to know how the series ends? I can tell you the end of the last book.
No, I don't. I would have read the book, but I don't want to know. I want to know, but I don't want to know now. I want to wait and find out.
Okay, so what I'm hearing you say is we have effectively created a sense of suspense.
Absolutely, you have.
Go us! Well done, us.
Good job. Go team. Okay, Adam, you go, because I'm wrapping my brain around stuff.
Sure. No, that's fine. I guess, were you guys on set or around when that team up got back together and what it was like for them to shoot those scenes again, having been, you know, having been paired so much in past seasons?
Yeah, actually, when Thomas came back, One of our executive producers, Mark Fergus, who works really well with Thomas, and they have a good relationship. He actually came back up too, and we had a couple of rehearsals where it was Thomas and Stephen and Mark Fergus and me sort of sitting quietly in the background taking notes, running through all of those scenes and getting them really dialed in so Thomas felt comfortable with what he was doing with his performance with Miller and how he wanted to approach it, and getting Stephen and Thomas back in the groove of working together again and getting them really dialed in, which is not hard because they're both uber professionals and they like each other. So it's pretty easy to get them going again. But yeah, it was not something we just sort of threw in a script and assumed was right. We spent a lot of time making sure that everybody agreed that it was the right approach.
I'd be really curious to talk to Thomas about this too, because it's got to be a different approach for him. He's playing the character he was before, but also something else, you know?
Well, and so one of the things that had happened between the end of last season and when we started writing stuff for Thomas for this season, or actually, you know, when we were on set getting ready to shoot it and we were making tweaks to the dialogue, is Thomas had gone and read Siebel of Bern and fallen in love with the interludes in Siebel of Bern, though, where we sort of get a vision of the interior logic of the investigator as it's created by the protomolecule and how it evolves, and fell in love with the sort of the cadence of those interludes and that the internal thought process of the protomolecule, and really wanted to bring that out and sort of vocalize a version of that through Detective Miller, which I thought was a really interesting idea. It wasn't something we had considered doing. So sort of take that interior protomolecule monologue and turn it into actual dialogue. And he brought a lot of those sorts of ideas with him, and Mark and I worked together to sort of incorporate those into the scripts. And yeah, I think it turned out really well. You get this sense of Miller's confusion about what he is and who he is and what directives he's being given by his puppet masters.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're gonna have anyone do that, having an actor like Thomas Jane to play that particular thing is a real blessing, it seems like.
It really is. And here's the thing about Thomas is Thomas has been a very busy working professional actor. The guy works nonstop, and he's been doing that for decades, like, I don't know, 30 years maybe he's been working nonstop. So anything that he can do in a part that he's never done before really excites him. Because, you know, I mean, after 30 years of scripts, you probably feel like you've seen everything. So yeah, when he got to do this, he's never played this kind of character before. And I think he got really excited about it.
So one of the things I want to talk about, cause this is actually the block when I came up. So I saw this set and it's so, or at least I saw parts of this set.
Which set is this year?
With the ring. And okay. With this whole part that, like, I think the next two episodes, I think it came up, not the next, is it the next episode was when I was actually up there and you just finished with this episode, or did you just finish 9 and I was up there for 10? It was this whole block, right? 8, 9, 10 was the same block?
No. Blocks are two episodes.
Yeah.
So 8 and 9 are the same block. So that's what I was
No,
up
7
there
and 8
for.
Are the same block.
7 are in the same
okay,
block.
So 9 and 10 was what I was up there for then, right?
Okay.
Because that was...
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you saw some funky sets, that was probably 9 and 10.
Yeah. And we get can you just like talk to people a bit about like how long it took to actually make the set for all of this, because I saw
that's not this episode.
Yeah, that's...
Well, no.
You're jumping ahead here.
No, listen. Not the next two episodes.
Oh.
This episode with the Mormon ship.
Oh,
and
yeah,
because
yeah.
That was incredibly detailed, too.
Yeah.
I don't think you can appreciate how detailed even that set was just from what you're seeing even on camera. I mean, it was incredibly detailed, but yeah. It was also...
Are you talking about
another
the control
set.
Room on the Behemoth?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an amazing set.
I love that set. And every shot in there just feels so otherworldly because of that, which is perfect for the Belters.
And I love the way that it's clearly got this sense of having been a temple that is now a workroom. You know, it's got all of the kind of very thoughtful, very intentional, very reverential design choices that were made originally, and then they ran some cable across it.
Yeah. It feels like this weird mix of exactly that, reverent iconography and cathedral building style. And they're just big holes drilled in the bulkhead so that, you know, you can run conduit through it and, you know, stuff going through paintings and across the floor. And yeah, it gives it a really interesting look that I don't know if I've ever seen that in a spaceship before.
And it's interesting too, because one of the things that's really cool about architecture is the way that buildings learn, the way that a house that has, you know, was built to house a single family and then got divided to become a duplex and then got put back together differently. And the structure and the aesthetics of the building itself change and kind of hold on to old versions of its function and old changes that were made even after the use has moved on. I mean, that's not something you see a whole lot in spaceship design in science fiction. But having something like the Nauvoo, which has become the behemoth, you know, it winds up having a history, and it winds up kind of embodying that history in ways that are actually really interesting.
So now when they had the issue launching the missile, when all of a sudden their power seemed to like cut out, was that because of the ring or was that because the ship was not,
it's a terrible battleship. It's the worst battleship ever. You designed it to be a generation ship and then you strapped a bunch of guns on it and no, it doesn't work real well. You know, it's a kludge.
Yeah. I mean, you can weld wings onto your Prius and mount a rocket launcher on the top, but that doesn't make it an F-15.
I can and I will though. Now, one of the things we talk about a lot in the books, and that was that was a gesture toward, was talking about all of the ways that the retrofit is trying to use your screwdriver as a hammer. It's not designed for that, but it's what we're using it for now. And so you have to have those changes. And they're awkward, some of them, and difficult, and they don't work real well, some of them.
But it does keep Chief Engineer Naomi Nagata busy.
Oh, my, yes. She's got stuff to do.
And I was going to say, that's a very Belter thing, just to have that kind of kludge. You know, using what's out there to make what you need.
So let's talk about, you know, that scene on the Behemoth when they're now making this decision to fire at the Rocinante. And you have three different stances where Drummer is almost kind of in the middle of where she stands. Like, it seems like she's wavering a little bit. Part of her maybe doesn't 100% believe that they should be shooting on the Rocinante, like, because she does seem to show a little more restraint or hesitation.
Well,
am I interpreting that the wrong way?
No, I mean, she doesn't want to murder Naomi's friends. Unless she has to. But she kind of has to.
Yeah, I just love that every scene on the Behemoth with those three. I think that Kara and Dom already had such great chemistry, and then you know you throw a new element into that mix. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I think that what Davis Jatharan brings, I mean, the chemistry that those three have, and the dynamics that are going on in every scene they're in, are just so compelling to me.
Yeah, no, they wound up being a really interesting group. And having a lot of very subtle and very thoughtful interactions when they were planning on how to present these three, I think it paid off pretty huge.
And just to see, you know, Davis Jatharan is he an Oscar winner or an Oscar nominee? I don't remember.
He actually won an Oscar, I believe, for Good Night and
Good Luck. Good Luck. Yeah.
Yeah. So to see him, and then, you know, these two younger actors who are more up and coming, but they are absolutely holding their own on the floor with him as well.
Well, and really, if you, one of the marks of a really great actor is they don't steal scenes. They bring up the people around them. One of the things I've come to really respect about the experienced actors we have on the show is that they're not hogging the camera. They're supporting the scene.
Yeah.
And that's an important thing. That's an important bit.
Yeah. I mean, David is a very generous actor. It doesn't matter who he's working with. If he's doing a scene with, you know, another, big name like himself, or he's doing a scene with a day player. You know, he's got some people he interacts with in these episodes that have very small parts. And he's just as generous with them as he is with anybody else. He wants them to really succeed in the scene. That's what you want in your cast. You want guys like that. And yeah, he's a class act for sure.
So I was going to say, I mean, with the drummer, you know, again, like, she is showing the restraint in this scenario but it seems a little out of characteristic for her, because she in the past seems...
I think it's very characteristic for her to think, someone's fucking with me, I'm not going to play. That's exactly drummer in my head. She's looking at this and going, yeah, this smells wrong. And...
All right, so, I mean, I guess I read it a little bit different. I kind of read her hesitation more to be because of Naomi.
Well, and that's a complicated situation, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Naomi's right that this is not something that Holden would do, and that this is a setup, and that somebody is fucking with him. And Ashford is right in that it doesn't matter. They still have to act on the situation as it is, no matter what the truth that's discovered later will be. But if they wait to do that, they're going to be in a firefight they can't do. You know, we have two people with absolutely accurate reads of the same situation coming to two completely different conclusions about what should be done, and drummer in the middle.
Yeah.
That's what that scene does.
So now, while this is playing out, I mean, in those last 10 minutes of the episode there was a lot obviously going on. But while that's playing out, where you have the debate with them on the behemoth, leading up to that, you have Alex and Amos talking about Holden, and where Amos initially was not as seemed to be a little bit more supportive of Holden. Now he's starting to be like, listen, like, something's fucking wrong. And the two of them kind of have to figure out how to navigate the situation with what seems like a mentally unstable captain.
Which is something we set up in the pilot episode, that this is a problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Which you called back to, which I loved that you guys called back to that and mentioned that in this episode. So for them, I mean, you know, Alex seems pretty adamant, like, he's going to try to buy them some time to outrun them and whatnot. But Amos eventually decides to give Holden a chance to work this out. So, I mean, not having read the books, what in that moment in the books leads Amos, even though he has these concerns about Holden's mental capacity at that moment and where he is and his ability to think clearly and rationally, what is it that makes him decide to give him that time?
I don't remember what we did in the books. Did we have that scene in the books?
No.
Yeah. I mean, what it was in the show was, what else are you going to do? I mean, you have the chance that Holden is going to pull a rabbit out of the hat, or you have the certainty that you're all going to be splashed. Yeah.
And really, the problem with them going with the situation as it falls out is alien technology showed up on Phoebe. An infected Eros turned it into a spaceship. It crashed on Venus. The thing on Venus came out as a giant squid, flew across the solar system, turned into a huge ring, and that ring opened up into some kind of portal that murdered somebody. But Ghosts of Miller, that's too far. Now you've gone too far. Now you've stretched credibility. I mean, like, they now live in a world where miracles happen, where impossible things are provably happening right outside the window. So it would be different if you're not in that world. If Holden just came and said, "Yeah, Miller, remember he died of emphysema, but he's been reappearing to me, and everything else is the world we know." That might be weird, but he's going, in addition to the thousands of other alien weird things that are happening, the other thing that happened is the guy who was actually killed by the aliens seems to be showing up to me.
Maybe.
Right?
Sure.
I mean, it's
could
just
be
one of many weird things that are going on.
Yeah, at this point, it'd be like, oh, come on, that's ridiculous. You know, that'd be an odd reaction.
Surely nothing that strange could happen.
Yeah.
What's that ring outside?
Yeah. That's way stranger than the squid that flew off of Venus and turned into a ring.
But that whole scene and that, you know, I loved the physics of that scene, you know, with when Alex does his burn and Amos gets slammed to the floor all of a sudden and everything. Like, it was just super, super tense filmmaking, you know.
And once
you see
again,
a lot of,
oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you see a lot of space battle scenes and everything like that. And this, and once again, I think it's The Expanse is unique in the way it depicts these things, but it like makes it so much more tense almost than like a standard dogfight type thing situation would be.
Yeah. And once again, you have to give Wes so much credit. I mean, he's such a gifted physical actor. And he just he doesn't protect himself at all. He just throws himself into anything. When you know, when we talked about the scene where he gets knocked to the floor because the ship has accelerated, when he threw himself at the floor, I thought he hurt himself. I mean, he looks like he's just getting slammed. You know, and he was fine. I mean, he's good at protecting himself in those sorts of falls, but just really, I mean, you couldn't ask for a more committed cast.
No.
He literally threw himself into his work there.
As someone who's done like fight choreography and stunt coordination, that's horrifying. But I guess good also.
Yeah. Oh no. The argument we always have with Wes whenever it comes to stuff like that is, we're trying to get stunt people in to do it, and he's arguing to keep them out and just let him do it. That's always the argument.
Oh sure. I've been there. But yeah. And how do you argue with Wes about that?
No, you can't.
At a certain point, you just gotta let it happen. But I guess, and then the last thing, and I don't want to, you know, we see the very last shot, so I don't want to get into that yet because I feel like a lot more about that particular what is through the ring, etc., is going to be explored in future episodes, and we couldn't talk about it much this week without getting into some pretty big spoilers. But I do want to talk about our mystery girl, which we haven't spent a lot of time on her yet.
Melba.
Melba, as we'll call her. In my notes, I just called her New Girl over and over again, which is horrible. Apologies to Zooey Deschanel. But, and some of the stuff in there, as Cher pointed out, you know, the scene of her squashing that guy's head so she can fit him in the compartment was pretty, was another intense moment in a season full of intense moments.
Yeah, but you also have those, the moments in the shuttle with her where she's actually affected by having done that. I mean, you know, this is not a stone cold killer. This is somebody who's experiencing a really complicated storm of emotions. That's weird, right?
And the interesting thing about that too, is I think that at this point, if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong, at this point in the story, in the books, that character is not a POV character yet. Is that right?
No, she is.
They are. Yes, she is.
Okay.
She is. No,
I didn't.
You start her very early in the books.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't remember getting that inner conflict of hers over the things that she was having to do on a violence level. But that could be just me not remembering it because it's been a while since I read that particular book.
Yeah, we'll find out more about her soon.
Can you talk a bit about casting this actor, though? Or again, is that something we can't get into without getting into her backstory a little bit? Because she's great so far. I mean, you know, little limited screen time, but she's had to do some really heavy emotional lifting and physical lifting.
I don't know how much we want to talk about, you know, there are some constraints on that casting that we probably don't want to talk about yet. But
okay.
What we can talk about is, yeah, we needed somebody who could have, you know, that the character in the book is another very internal character. It's somebody who we spend a lot of time inside of her head and with her not talking or interacting with people honestly or doing all of those things that would make the storytelling straightforward for a camera. So having somebody who could do a lot of very physical acting, who was good at making emotions clear, even if it's not, you know, written in the script. Oh, I feel very conflicted over having murdered my friend and mentor. You know, you don't want to. There's no one to say that to, so you can't, and you probably shouldn't even if you could. Having somebody who can carry that off through her performance was important, and Nadine's able to do that.
She does, you know, for a major character like that, she gets almost no dialogue.
No, and that's one of the things that makes her really cool.
Yeah.
One of the things I didn't understand, or interested like intellectually before we started doing this, was the power of being the one who says the least. But I go back and I look at like The Way of the Gun and the Benicio del Toro character, where he pulled out a bunch of his lines from the script and just made it really minimal so that everything he says lands. Mm-hmm. I feel like Melba is in a very similar place with that, where she's really a more powerful and alive and deep character because there is this kind of paucity, this kind of this space where you just get to be with her as an image and not with not trying to parse what she's saying.
Right. And of course, theoretically, we may or may not get more into her character as we go along.
We should probably find something out about it, don't you think? It'd be kind of rude if we didn't.
I wouldn't want to say one way or the other. I can neither confirm nor deny.
Nice. Good line.
Now, this is where show transitions into CSI space. And Grissom and team come in and do blood swabs on the floor there, which she cleaned up. And you know, it's the rest of the series is about them trying to track her down and convict her of murder.
Yep.
Well, and then there's probably a crossover with the Law and Order, right, where you have a court case and.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. No, we don't have a connection to Law and Order like we do with CSI.
Yeah.
Because you know, Noreen used to be a senior writer on CSI for like 8 years, and so you know, we have a connection there. We can get Grissom to come in.
I mean, I don't know. I don't have anything else for this episode.
Yeah, that was this week's episode. Very explosive ending, and I'm assuming we'll find out a lot more about...
next episode's going to be fascinating. I'm really looking forward to what you guys think about the next one, especially you, Cher. I'm very...
I heard about this one.
Well, don't? Yeah, okay.
I'm not going to say anything. I'm just saying I heard about this one, so I actually have been looking forward to this since the beginning of the year because I had heard about this. So. Awesome.
This is the episode that takes place entirely in Bayonne, New Jersey.
Yep.
So we figured this one was just right up your alley.
I hate you.
I thought you were proud of your Bayonne roots.
Because I don't.
What do you mean, the home of George R. R. Martin?
That's right.
Right.
He was recognized by the city.
I know that was the first thing you and I bonded over was how shitty that town is. Yeah.
What? Come on.
Apologies to anyone who's listening in Bayonne.
No, don't apologize.
Sorry, George.
Let's do some shout outs. You guys want to go first?
I want to do my shout out. I'm going to do a shout out to Bayonne, New Jersey. Lovely city in the Garden State of America with beautiful views of the waterways, the shipping waterways. And go Bayonne.
I hate you.
So I had something else in mind earlier, but I'm going to change it. I want to shout out Steve Spahn and his group, Able Gamers, which is a charity that helps people who are disabled or working with difficulties physically to engage with video games and have that kind of connection and experience open to him. My wife's been talking to him. We've been part of what he's doing for probably a year, year and a half now.
And your wife actually uses some of the alternate control things on the PlayStation.
Yep. Yeah. We have some of those assistive devices here that make it possible for her to spend as long as she wants playing Borderlands 2 without exacerbating any underlying conditions. Right? And I think the work he's doing is really good and has made a real difference in a lot of people's lives and has been useful and important for us in particular. So go Steve and go Able Gamers.
Yeah, that's a really good group. They deserve support and whatever help people can give.
Adam?
I'm going to shout out Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Really? Which,
yeah, I really dug it. And I was on record, you know, in our other podcast, Who Won the Week, about, you know, saying, why really? I'm not excited about this movie.
Because you hate everything, I know.
No, that's not true. It was more just like I was, and I think it's honestly, could we have lived without a Han Solo origin film? Yes, of course. I don't think was a story that was aching to be told. But that said, I had a really good time with it. And the comparison I've been making recently is Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one, which I also really love, but which is kind of like this light action, you know, comedic action adventure picaresque type of thing, and Solo is very much the same deal, and it's a type of movie that I feel like if I was flipping around on cable and it was on, I would keep watching it. So, you know, I it's interesting because I feel a lot of people have been calling it inessential and, you know, not, we didn't need this movie, etc. And I thought back to like movies like Robin Hood, the Errol Flynn Robin Hood or something like that, and did Robin Hood's story need to be told another time at that time? Probably not, you know, but it was done really well and it was a lot of fun. And so that's kind of how I feel about this one. It's like, I liked it. I don't think it makes or breaks the Star Wars franchise, but it was a good time. So that's my shout out.
Okay. My shout out is actually going to be the Expanse fans, because they really did rally hard in ways that I've never seen a fandom express their support for a show. And and also because of the fact that, you know, they do support this podcast, and because of it, the podcast is now featured, you know, on iTunes TV Talk, which is a big deal. So like I jokingly tweeted last week, even the ones that say nasty things about me in the comments, I'm still going to shout them all out, because
why is anybody saying nasty things about you in the comments, Cher? I don't understand.
Because that. I'm a girl, I guess. I get accused for all sorts of stuff. It's fantastic. Some of it is stuff Adam does. It's amazing. But still, I do appreciate everyone that listens to this podcast, supports the podcast, and of course supports the show, because without the show, this podcast wouldn't exist. And without the fans, neither of these things would exist. So,
yeah, yay. And I mean, you know, we said it before, but the show being saved, I mean, could not have happened without the outpouring of support and people rallying to watch it on Sci-Fi and show that it could get ratings, you know, and things like that, I think were important as well. So, yeah, I agree with Cher, but obviously your shout out, so I'm not trying to bogart it.
Yeah, but, I mean, you just did, but that's okay.
I'm adding
I'm kidding. Go ahead, Ty. What were you
I was just going to say, I agree. I think that was a really good one to do. I also appreciate it greatly. But I do want everybody listening to know that I am allowed to be mean to Cher. You are not. So you need to chill that shit out.
Yeah, because I'm actually friends with him. I don't know these people.
You may not know this, but Ty is actually officially licensed to... Yes. To me, he has a card and everything.
By the state of New Jersey. Yeah.
Yes. All right. On that note, for everybody, you can always catch us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Wire, or, you know, if you're listening on iTunes, wherever you listen to the podcast, you know, leave some, maybe say something nice about me. I don't know, but just leave 5 stars and say nothing about me at all. Of course, you know, let us know in the comments or what you guys thought of this episode, and we will talk to you guys next week.